Yeah. Welcome to Videorama, where we've got the Laserdisc and the VHS still because it's relevant again, thanks to you hipsters. We had another woman call into us. We're getting a lot of women calling in about nudity, and now they don't want nudity. So it may be another deranged woman. I'm not sure, but they were asking for some porn. Well, they don't want porn because we don't sell porn because we're kind of Christian.
They didn't say anything about nudity.
We're a family store.
Well, the first one did. The first one's like, I don't want to see them titties. And now they're like, I want to see them titties. So they wanted a movie with porn actresses or actors in them. And that made it kind of simple. I think so, at least. So I'm
the
porista. Well, who doesn't have a fucking porn addiction? We all have a browser history that reflects this. We just don't like to discuss it.
Porn.
But I'm Donnie, and yeah, we're getting into the shit.
I am Linda, otherwise known as the Cheesiac. I don't know.
I'm Chris Hansen. Come sit down.
Oh, my.
I want to put my face in your blank.
What's happening?
Or I'm Adrian. Whatever.
Well, yeah, what is
Donnie
happening?
Said browser history.
Maniac is happening.
Maniac
and, oh boy.
With Elijah Wood?
If he could.
Oh, I'm sorry. That Maniac from the 30s from the director of Reefer Madness?
No.
Okay.
I was hoping we'd just all go silent at that.
In our hearts, we've already been silent. But this is a wondrous movie, a fun movie, a heartwarming family film of a movie.
Yeah, fun for the whole family.
Yes.
It's about a boy who just loves his mama.
Well, pretty much, yeah. That's kind of up for debate as well, sadly, for some people. I don't understand. But this is kind of my trifecta of love. It's a movie made by William Lustig, who also happened himself to not only direct porn, but do porn. And in fact, his porn name was Billy Bag. And
it's wonderful.
It really is. And he's directed two porn films, which we'll get into later. And he also happened to cast a lot of porn people in this film because why not? And they didn't even have to show nudity. Well, there is some nudity, yes, but the porn actresses themselves, they didn't really have to go that far. It was really a very fun time. And that's why I think Adrian and I love this movie, because it was made in the sleaziest time of New York. It was made super low budget, so people got away with a lot of shit you couldn't get away with today. And it was just pure, unadulterated, lovely, sleazy fun.
There are a few things more beautiful than a film shot in early 80s New York without permits.
Yes.
Especially anywhere around Times Square. And you get inside of the buildings, and they're all filthy and painted and repainted, and every door has 16 locks on it, and everything's forced into feverish close-ups because space in New York is at a premium.
Yes.
So you're saying that you're a big fan of Vampire's Kiss.
That was a movie made... We need to go back to math class, the late 80s and the early 80s. They're two different times.
Yeah.
Two different times.
Linda. There was a time when they decided to leave New York to the rats, and then a time when they decided to clean it up.
Yeah, Vampire's Kiss is Giuliani, New York. Different New York.
Yeah, Maniac is about a wonderful Italian-American trying to make his way in the world while dealing with being kind of schizophrenic, kind of mental, kind of wanting to kill lots of ladies because, yes, they remind him of his mother. And
he doesn't go through that phase.
Yeah, right? Now, it's not it's scalp. Because that's his thing. It's like a man's got a scalp. He just likes collecting hair. And
well, they have such lovely hair, and he has to keep it forever. People die.
They do. And he has to preserve them on mannequins, which he decorates his room with, which already was a fun frickin' room to look at. considering it wasn't a set they built. They hired a Russian artist to make the room, and he filled it with original art he made for this room. That's awesome. And they're like, this man had no idea he was making an apartment, so he just put in like a shrine, statues, candelabras, like shit you would not have in a New York apartment unless you really wanted them.
They would not let me do back in St. Petersburg. I come New York and do.
But yes, this Mr. Frank Zitti goes around killing women. Linda, you've just vanished into the void, and we'll try to summon you back with the cats. And at some point in time, the man finds love in New York City, which is a classic tale as old as time, but not when he decides to kill her and then feels bad about it. And eventually, oh my god, a time cat!
Well, it's because Rita knew. She understood.
She knew what she was getting into. Just like this cat is going to claw my sister's face off. She knew what she was getting into. Oh, and, you know, she's sorry about it. But,
cat.
Well, Linda should have known when the cat told her that you remind her of her mother. And like, that should have said something to you. But eventually the film ends with him having an unfortunate, timely demise, which is done beautifully in his mind when he just stabs himself, but in his mind gets wonderful things done to his body. I present to you Maniac.
Yep. Maniac.
That 1980 Maniac, for the record.
Yes, not the first person remade Maniac with Elijah Wood, which is still a really good movie.
It is good.
I didn't see that one.
I'm not usually a fan of remakes, but it was solid.
I mean, I love Elijah Wood, but...
It was a different choice to make that entire movie from first-person perspective, but...
That usually hasn't gone over so well. They did that on that Lady of the Lake movie, and a lot of people were just annoyed. And by the first reel of Out of the Past with Bogart, a lot of people were like, "What's this POV shit? I can't even spell POV. What's going on?"
I know POS, but not POV.
Yeah, you know me. I've got to say that vision. Just as a little PSA for everyone out there, anyone on a date, one, do not ever say, "You're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen since my mom." And also, if your date says it, make up an excuse to leave and leave quickly.
Wait a minute, but how much is the ultimate?
Oh, that's $100.
Change your locks and never go out in public alone. Never leave the house.
Told me not to go out tonight.
No, this is too much funny. No, too much. No, 60.
I still want to know what the hell the ultimate was.
Well, you should have seen what he bought the ultimate. Oh, look.
I am a whore and have seen much, but that man, wow, what he wanted. Boy, howdy.
Yeah.
Did you guys just hear Catter's thoughts?
There's many things that Meatloaf would do, but that may be the one thing he will not do is the ultimate. But we shall have to find a streetwalker to tell us what the ultimate is. And we will pay money for people so they can find out what the ultimate is.
So in our next episode, we'll be having Adrian's grandmother.
She could tell you about back in the day. That's true.
Well,
I took quite a pounding.
Depends on what year you're talking about. Let's see, 1980.
There may not be much tread left on the tires, honey, but they're still good.
I just know both my grandmas are current with God. They go to confession regular.
I'm good with the things.
He has to collect.
So this is the weirdest sequel to Star Crash just ever.
You're right.
Being that Stella Star is back and the evil emperor who survived getting blown up somehow, like, how'd that even happen? Wow.
Well, what's even funnier about it is Bill, well, everyone calls him Bill Lustig. His name is William, but William just gets shortened to Bill, just like Richard gets to Dick. I don't know why they do these things
just
to
like
them.
My ex you met that time.
Ay vey.
Start calling all dicks Dickard.
Hey, you've just been Dickard.
Sup, Dickard?
But the director said that the idea of this film, oddly enough, came from a good friend of his and producer when he just told him on a random car ride, he's like, I think you should do a movie like Jaws on Land. And he's like, well, that's an interesting concept. That's where he came up with this idea. And that's also why the film begins on a beach scene, because Jaws began on the beach as well with its first murder. So, yeah, he actually tied a lot into this. And another reason to love movies made in this area, or era, especially in the New York era, is a lot of these locations, if you've seen the movie Cruisin', are from Cruisin'.
and Joe Spinell once again
in the movie Cruisin'.
as the murderous gay leather cop. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
What do you know? You'll be driving this car when you're old and gray.
We need to make leather cop after we make rape cop. It's gonna be a cop trilogy.
And then there'll be a crossover.
Well, remember leather rape cop. The creator of Maniac Cop, but not of Psycho Cop. Psycho Cop's unrelated.
Psycho Cop. Qu'est-ce que c'est?
I chose this movie because, as Adrian opened the door with Hell Knight and the director from that having directed porn, I just kept thinking immediately, I'm like, I wanted to do this movie because it has about 3 or 4 porn stars in it, but also the director himself was in porn and directed
which
porn.
Which is the best reason, but which porn stars are in this one?
Let Adrian's not open the door.
We're going to get into that after we get into another thing we'd like to call Adrian's section of...
Amy, what happened? What did you do? Amy, this is serious. Damn it. Where is it, Amy? Where is my money?
Where is it?
Where is our money, everybody? Indeed. So this movie had its New York premiere on January 30th of 81, and it went into general release on March 6th of 1981. And it cost the $350,000. Nice, modest budget. And it earned the $10 million, so fuck you, Gene Siskel. This thing made its money. Lick my shit, Gene Siskel. Yeah. So movies that this thing was up against around that time, mm-hmm. right? So these are the movies that people were paying to see. So number one movie for March of 81, unfortunately, I'm not finding more specific than that. Was The Final Conflict, the third The Omen movie, the one where Sam Neill plays Damien. And it's not very good. Something called Back Roads, never fucking heard of it. Toby Hooper's The Fun House.
Yeah.
I remember the cup.
Yep. And something called All Night Long. All night, all night,
all night. All night.
Then comes Modern Romance. And number six was Eyes of a Stranger.
Oh, man.
I've always known that the mirror never lies.
Hi.
Yeah. That was number six. That also involves murder. I don't think I've actually seen it, though.
Mm.
It is a character who could be described as a maniac.
Dun, dun, dun.
On the
floor. Oh, I see what you did there.
But also fun about the budget is a big portion of the budget came from the director's porn money, because even after he directed the porn, he was still getting checks in the mail for his porn royalties
porn
for the film
money.
Being shown in different theaters.
Porn money.
He invested originally, I think it was $30,000, and then just as they were getting to the point where they had no money left, he got a big royalty check of another $20,000 in the mail, so that went also to the budget. And
nice.
They kept trying to sell this off to as many people as they could until one person just saw the premise, and he's like, say no more, I want to see it on screen. Where everyone else is like, why the fuck are you making this trash? Because again, being this fun era, it was not common to be a fan of horror films. So if you were, you were generally kind of an outcast, and people just didn't want to talk to you.
We're because deep, the horror at deep the time in the backlash.
Just, yeah.
Well, also,
just not invited to parties often is the best
John
thing to
Lennon
say.
Got blown away right around then, and that was like Nipplegate for like the 80s, right? That was used as the excuse to like, look at this. All this violence is subliminating into the consciousness, and people are killing each other. I blame slasher movies. It's like, really? Did Mark David Chapman even watch slasher movies? I don't think he even did. No, John Lennon got killed. It's not okay.
Yeah, and it's also, it kind of ties in, not really necessarily the same time period, but also the, I know you'll remember the exact phrase for it, but there was an era where they started condemning all videos of horror as being, like, violence-inflicting films.
Yeah, well, that was even worse in the UK.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
Where it's like they just flat out had ratings boards that were just out to censor every fucking thing under the goddamn sun.
Yeah, well, that's a big, well, in the West, you know, you got your Ronald Reagan in the U.S. and you got your Margaret Thatcher in fucking England, and Thatcher England was big on censorship. Also, so if you look up any horror movie, basically made in the 70s or the 80s, you'll see its status as a video nasty.
Yeah, video nasty. Thank you.
And most of them were simply seized. Other ones, they actually tried to prosecute the distributor for obscenity.
Yeah,
send you to jail for importing a movie like Zombie or Friday the 13th Part 2.
And I can't remember, was this movie, I don't think it was banned. I think they just didn't allow it, period, in Germany. I think it was
right. Germany, it wasn't so much the prosecution and all that, but they've always been big on censoring violence for some reason. It's everybody has their vice. In Europe, it's like, what are you talking about? These are just tits. We love tits. Tits are great. On asses. And put a girl in a stormtrooper hat and some stockings. Oh man, that's my favorite. I'm gonna show this on children's television. And it's like somebody gets slapped. You're like, whoa, wait, that was a non-kinky slap. What are you doing? What are you doing? What's wrong with you? Oh my god. Oh, you show blood. Oh, you sicko. So
it's kind of like this film, this and Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. These things are just amazing movies, but they also just trip people the fuck out back then because they didn't want to see these type of things because they kind of did disturb you with the idea that these people could actually exist and did actually exist.
Yeah. Well, people are just, very, very like shitty about when their comfort zone gets violated. You can show all the violence you want to if it's in a war movie.
Well, if it's
Rambo blowing away 63 people in 63 minutes is like, you know, like, yeah, it's fine. It's like, whoa, what's with this slow, sonorous violence? What's going on here?
Yeah.
I'm not okay with this.
And that's even something funnier that got me a lot of people upset about this film is that a lot of people today don't care about it because to them it's just makes no sense. It's boring. But everyone still kind of gets to a point where they just get invested and then think it's gross around the time when he has the woman tied to his bed and he stabs her and it looks like he's humping the body. But it's just because it's so like cold and calculated how he's doing this now. Whereas before it was just random murders at any time, any place. And it was just kind of over quickly. But it's like in this, you can literally see just the crazed look in his eye and
eyes. Piece.
Yeah. And that's why I love Joe Spinell. I mean, the guy, he's a character actor. Yeah. He's been in so many freaking good movies. I mean, we had Godfather 1 and 2, freaking Sorcerer.
Yeah,
the Ninth Configuration.
Nighthawks with Stallone.
Yeah, Nighthawks, oh my god.
And he's also in Rocky. Yeah.
He was in both Rockies, he was, I can't remember the character's name, but yeah, he was the guy that Stallone was working for. And apparently even in outside of film, he used to give money to Stallone when he had no money to feed his family and he had nothing to eat. He would go out and just say, here's a couple $100, do what you need. And everyone that knew Joe Spinelli, aside knowing the guy loved his drugs, they all said he was just like a super, super friendly guy to know. And he just always went out of his way to help people. And he also was in a movie.
That's the way he died.
I know,
so
right?
He killed a couple women and scalped them. I mean,
his character, not him.
Well, we know
himself.
You do that all the time, Linda.
But even that's like the funnest thing I love about him and I don't know if Linda even remembers him being in it, but Joe Spinell was also in the wonderful, hard-to-find cult film from the Mystical Knights of the Oingo Boingo, Forbidden Zone.
Oh, shit, yeah. He was in there, okay.
Yeah. Shit, he was even in the semi-quasi tied-in movie to The Exorcist, The Ninth Configuration, so...
Oh, but again, he was the character actor, and he always sounded the fuck out of that one.
Boingo Boingo for life, baby!
But I mean, even the guy, he was a very big, like I said, character piece, and he, I believe he said also, the inspiration he got for how the character acted was because right across the street from, Bill's apartment was a legitimate crazy person that would just rock in their chair all day, all night, talking to themselves and just like staring death daggers at people.
Yep.
Like, I'm glad I'm not the only one living next to psychos like this.
We had a neighbor like that growing up.
No.
We had a neighbor named Ernestine in the neighborhood we moved into in 1989 in Todd Ranch. And she would wear a purple nightgown and she would stand out in the middle of the street and she'd sweep all the flowers that fell off of the tree on the edge of our yard. There was a jacaranda tree.
Linda might remember this lady, but she's still here and still roaming the streets freely in Port Orchard, but it's a woman who just stares at the sun, having conversations with it, walking down the street and in the middle of the road.
With the crazy makeup?
Yes.
And the frizzy hair? Yeah.
No, Kazoo's right there, and she's the only one who can see him. Hi there, Dum Dum.
God damn it. But, Oh my. I guess we're going to transition to a piece that we could make an entire goddamn episode on because I had to condense a lot of shit.
Okay.
But I am going to be siphoning from my brain and Linda's brain back into my brain stuff that I know that Linda also may know. But now we all know because it's okay to know things.
There's Dottie's PSA. It's okay to know things.
I want that on a shirt with my face. I want it on a shirt with my face that says, it's okay to know things.
Can you be giving like an overall?
I will be doing a... or just a high five, because, you know, that's fashionable.
Well, if you're high-fiving somebody, you both got to have the bell-bottom jeans and some tight sweaters, and one of you's got to have a fro.
Yeah, and we can have Carlo do it. Carlo can be on a desk with the book and me and Linda smiling up to him and it just says in magical rainbow lettering. It's okay.
In magical rainbow letters, yeah.
I mean, Carlo has a magical fro.
That's what I'm saying. The rainbow can be coming from his fro.
All right. Now just go out and buy the Charlie Brown sweater and we'll be good.
Yes. Yes, this is how it works. This is how you make a shirt. This is how we make money.
But this is how it's done, everybody. Take notes.
Puerto Rican Santa Claus.
God damn. But, as I said, William Lustig, wonderful human being, a visionary man. He directed two movies before this, which were both pornos of high caliber. No, they weren't. Sure.
Only the highest.
The Violation of Claudia and Hot Honey. Wonderful movie.
That's a great title, Violation of Claudia. That's
Yeah, it's
that's
it's,
almost as good as Nine Lives of a Wet Pussy.
Exactly. Which and I real. Own that movie.
Snatch Adams.
Snatch Adams, yes, and Edward Penis Hands. All classics in their own right.
A lot of the great new Hollywood filmmakers did forms of pornography and exploitation in the 60s and 70s before their careers really took off.
Yeah, I love Bill even mostly because of this movie, but like the more you know about the guy, knowing that every day of his life, even till today, he still watches a shit ton of movies. And everyone
that we could make, like, direct a really awesome porn.
I think we would. But this guy has just been doing this and staying awesome for a long time. He really put his heart into this. And what gets me about this, the dude was like 25 when he made this movie. And the man had been doing porn and directed two porns before that.
That's a freaking American success story. This guy's like the Orson Welles.
What are we doing with our lives? I mean, goddamn.
Well, we spent our hot years being like, oh, I could never do a porno. Not me.
That's true. But to answer your earlier question, Adrian, there are women's that did the pornins in this movie.
And no way.
Yes, one of them was, they're all from the era I love, and I may own most of these movies.
Where the cunts had mustaches.
Yes, when dicks had sideburns. And Abigail Clinton was in this movie. She was known mostly for Seven and the Snowy, as well as Hot Cookies. And she also was in my favoriteest movie during this time, Sex World. It has the most amazing soundtrack ever, and it's the adult porn take on Westworld. It is amazing in every way it should be.
Doesn't Westworld already kind of lend itself like to porn? I mean,
well, it's Michael Crichton, he's a pervert. Like, Michael Crichton as a director, giant pervert. Did you know that they tried to make a TV series out of Westworld after Future World?
Where
Agents of Devos trying to stop the mad scientist who can control all the androids, even though in the second movie it was established that Delos itself is evil.
Yeah.
So, there's a reason.
Yeah, and there's a reason that you don't have, like, Jurassic Porn Park, because you're not going to go pay $1,000 to fuck a T-Rex. I mean, you could. But,
you wouldn't.
You wouldn't fuck a T-Rex. Right.
You wouldn't fuck a T-Rex, would you?
It's so helpless. It's got those tiny arms.
We also have Sharon Mitchell, who worked with Bill on The Violation of Claudia. She was in another two movies I own, Skinflicks and Barbara Broadcast. And this is like my favorite thing about this woman. She's still beautiful today. She has appeared in almost 500 adult films. Like, she's been in 457 adult films. She's directed 19 films. And the motherfucker has a PhD, not a PhD in sucking dick, mind you, but a PhD as a full-fledged fucking doctor. I mean, she's pretty goddamn awesome. So, yeah, good on her. Good on her.
Rats
off to her. All
right.
Yeah.
Rats off to you.
But again, why I love this era, because a lot of the people casted in this, like Joe Spinell and everyone else in this, they were all friends of a friend of a friend of a friend. And since Joe Spinell is a huge character actor, he knew a lot of people from other films that he could call on to get into this. And then you had, Tom Savini. He had just finished up working on Friday the 13th. And they're like, hey, you do horror stuff. Would you like to work with us? And this was during a time when, Tom Savini was like, I will take any job literally you give me and I will go there. But he didn't want to work on the film originally because where they were was close to where an ex of his lived and they had just recently broken up. So he didn't want to spend too much time there. So like, well, we can get you an apartment. He's like, all right, that's cool. So then he just spent a while working with them there. And it's one of my favorite things that they were talking about happened on here. Is, like I told Linda the previous night, he gets to blow his own face up, and he loved it because he had a mask of himself for Day of the Dead. Or no, it was Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead, yeah.
Where they got to terrorize him. So he wanted to blow his head up, but he also did it as a send-off to his nose because he had a nose job done shortly after. So he just joked that was the end of his old fat nose, and now no one will ever know because he has a new, nicer nose. Or as he put it, an ethnic nose. And the subsequent scene where they did do this effect, Joe Spinell was going to use the shotgun on the car. And they had an actual shotgun loaded with full-on ammo.
Totally illegal in New York.
Exactly. You cannot do this at all, period.
Cannot carry a gun in New York
to begin with. But Tom Savini's like, I'll do it. Like, I'll get on the hood of the car and shoot through the fucking windshield. What could happen? So he fires the gun. He goes flying off the hood of the car. Joe Spinelli catches him. And then the next thing they all say is, okay, run. So they all just load everything up into the car and go driving around for God knows how long along streets trying to avoid sirens because they heard the cops coming.
They had to have a pickup truck waiting with the engine running to get it off the scene because they were breaking the law. They had no permits and they were super breaking the law by firing a gun in the city.
That makes me think of Bowfinger.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's like that. No.
But it's even funnier because I guess after long days of filming, Bill would be like, okay, I'm tired. I want to go to bed. And then Joe Spinell and a couple of the other actors would come by and like, hey, can we borrow the camera and some film? And they're like, why? He's like, we're going to shoot shit for the film. Like, all right, sure. Don't get caught or arrested. So they would go around sneaking around New York and filming pickup scenes, additional scenes, like the stuff with the Santa Claus that he's staring at in the toy store window and a couple other outside scenes. That was all stuff that Joe Spinell shot on film. And even that itself was kind of hilarious because they could barely afford the film they had. It's like they were just literally scrounging for every scrap of film they could find. And his producers, as well as one of the other actors and Joe, were on him like, we need to make shirts and we need to make buttons for this film to promote it. It's like, fuck you guys. Like, we can barely afford to shoot this goddamn movie. But then after it came out and became such a hit, it's like all that stuff would now be worth thousands of dollars. And like, fuck, we should have done this, but we didn't. We didn't have the money for it. So it just hugely pissed them off. It was a huge learning experience for all of them, especially with guerrilla filmmaking in New York. But it was still something they really enjoyed because it was the first movie that they made. And like he stresses to people, if you ever want to make a movie, make your first movie because it's the only time you'll ever get that experience and the wondrous awe. But granted, it's not going to be anywhere near the adventure these guys had back in this time. And
that's real Larry Cohen time right there. Like just
absolutely. And that's even
running away from the cops, you know?
Oh God. Yeah. And it's kind of funny too, because it's kind of a blink and you miss it, but the movie marquee above the apartment Frank's staying at, two wonderful things happened there. In the movie, you can see, because it was a wonderful time to be alive in the 80s, they're on the marquee, they're showing Alex Dorenzi's baby face, which is another porno that I own. And Alex has also directed 200 adult films.
My word. He directed two more while he slept, yeah.
Yes. And something that almost got them all in trouble, but thankfully they had the foresight not to put their sets up because they couldn't film there, technically, is the apartment they were using for Frank Zitti's room. They all had to be evicted from the apartment, and the cops went and raided the place because they were after a serial killer who had gone after in Central Park and had beheaded a prostitute.
It was the and they're
like,
wow.
Oh my God, it's like, this is almost exactly like our shit. And I guess apparently Joe Spinell's like, well, I'm glad I didn't have the corpses up there in the room. But yeah, they were just like, oh God, if they knew anything of what we were doing, it's like we would lose our main actor. They could possibly shoot the rest of us for trying to explain the situation.
It's the NYPD. They'll just frame a Haitian guy.
Or
Puerto Rican, whoever they can get, you know.
They're all white, so I think they're okay. They're
not gonna get shot. All white.
What? No, Joe didn't do this killing. He's from the neighborhood.
But I don't know how Linda was with the violence of this movie, but a lot of people had some problems with it, especially feminists, which really kind of irked the director.
Well,
because
oh God.
When have I ever had a problem with
even
the
violence? Even though the most famous killing in the movie is of a man.
Yes, exactly. It's like everyone knows the head blowing
up. But that's another thing. It's like Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel. They always wring their hands when a horror movie comes up. It's like, oh, this is tasteless. And the violence against women. And yet the scene that made Gene Siskel leave the theater is the scene where Tom Savini's head blows up.
It's kind of a weird cinematic thing where we love exploding head scenes. It's like this chopping mall, scanners. Movies, yeah. As soon as you blow
when
up
you
the
really
head, like,
blew up the head, memorable. Mind you, you know, like when fucking Michael Ironside psychically blows up a guy's head that's full of dog food, slow motion on screen, like that's when head splitting is good.
Which is actually a fun bit that Tom Savini joked about this with the violence, that for the exploding head they filled that up with seafood salad and shrimp. It's like that was the brain matter and most of the guts.
That makes sense.
It looks right.
And he was laughing because the director overheard this conversation, because Joe Spinell, not only was he acting it, he was producing and he helped write the script. And he also did the newspaper headlines. Like, he came up with all that shit.
Nice.
And he was kind of arguing with Tom Savini and all the director, because he was like, they didn't just want to scalp the women. Joe wanted the character to also rip out labia and clitorises.
Oh, real Jack the Ripper.
He's like, it would have been either cut off with like the razor he had, or literally bitten off in his mouth. And he had this whole idea that you can have it like hanging half off his jaw and his neck.
Jeez, please.
Well, I was not trying, or is maniac.
But it was funny because Tom Savini's like, I can't do that. We're not going to do that. And the director's like, oh, thank God. And then Tom Savini's like, you know, if I did that, I'd need to go buy, like, I don't know, oysters or something. I mean, I think I could do it, but I don't think we can do that. It's like, oh, God, you can't do the effect. God, not, we shouldn't do it. But they all agreed.
There's
even
no
director.
Not to do it. Think of how many dick cutting movies there are.
But that's just it. It's like the director's like, no, like, it's like here and no further. He's like, we're not going to do this. That's way too much for this movie. And like I said, people, especially feminists, already had enough of an agenda against the film because of the violence against women. And because, like we were talking about earlier, when Linda was lost to the void, the whole slow stabbing of the lady secured on his bed, and how people just saw that, especially women, as being very, very calculated and very, very cold. And it just was legitimately scary because of the character, because of the craziness in his face. And
it's never okay to get inside the head of a male serial killer, because that promotes the male gaze.
I don't know. I think that, you know, I consider myself a feminist, but at the same time, like I never really have a problem with movies, because it's an experience. It's not supposed to be like, hey, kids, you know what's really cool? Go out there and cut off some labia. Huh?
Like, go.
Yeah, who's actually going to go cut out some labia?
Off. They
it's
won't
effort.
Yeah, that shows dedication.
You know what all the cool kids are doing these days? Labia cutting.
But on the last part of the labia, it was kind of funny, because even then, it's a comment that Tom Savini made was like, like I said, we could use like clams or oysters for this, but he's like, this place already smells like a seafood buffet.
Oh, it's
like between all the seafood they were using and ordering to fill the body parts up with. And, funny enough, the car they used with the exploding head, he said they had to ditch the car because the guy only paid, I think, $200-$300 at the time for it. But he said the camera riggers destroyed the car, because when they rigged the camera mount to the outside of the car, they actually attached it to the drive of the car. So it's like after they filmed the scene where they're driving around with the car, it's like you couldn't use it. That's why Tom Savini parked the car where it was, because you couldn't move the fucking thing. So they had to ditch the car, and he said somewhere at the bottom of the Hudson River is this car with half a wired body they made up for it sitting in the driver's side of the car. So waiting for the day to come when they actually pull that out of the river.
Well, with all the mafia murders and stuff, they'll never pick that one out. You know.
Yeah, they won't mind. As long as it's not Jimmy Hoffa, no one cares.
Did you read about where they got all their helicopter shots from?
I read about this, but please do go on.
They are all reused. From Dario Argento's Inferno from the year before, which is set in Manhattan. It's shot in Rome, but it's set in Manhattan. There's second unit shots, helicopter shots in New York.
Which,
did we talk about Daria?
Yes, please do, because there's a lot. There's that, and there's another tie to the Italians in this that's pretty fun.
Oh.
So, of course, Daria Nicolodi was actually, Dario Argento's wife.
That's right. They were in love.
His concubine. She was originally attached to doing the movie, but she pulled out because she didn't want to do the naked lesbian scene. All of those naked lesbian scenes.
All of them. That just decimated the movie.
It was just lousy with naked lesbian scenes.
Now, I mean, it did kind of pull you out of the picture when the two nurses started just scissoring right outside waiting for the car to pull up. So I mean,
and
yeah.
Grunting while doing it.
And how they keep aggressively grunting. On the hood of that Dodge Diplomat while it was driving at 25 miles an hour like that. I just can't figure it out. And it was February. That's dedication.
Listeners and viewers, if you have not seen the movie, there is no lesbian. New scenes, they're just non-existent.
This didn't ping the Adrian exploitive meter, so.
No.
Every other movie ever has a naked lesbian scene, though, for some reason. And there's any two women show up, they're having tea, you know, it's Maggie Smith, you know, and Dame Judi Dench. It's like, remember the time we had tea with Mussolini? Yes. Well, okay. Shall we throw down, Yen? Yes, I believe I'll have a must
you
dive.
You say that, and now that's all I fucking want to see.
Well,
I created a monster.
We can do another remake of the movie and just have nothing but lesbians.
But it has to be
that's the Wachowski sisters directed it, right?
It's gonna be us directing.
They'll make it a sequel to Bound, right? You know, Bound
oh,
2 Maniac.
God, no.
Oh, you're so freaking hot. I know, right? Gee whiz. Oh yeah. Let's do the ultimate. Yeah, let's do it right outside.
What about around the world? No, you want the ultimate.
Trust me.
Maggie Smith, Dame Judi Dench, it's just an amazing honor to meet you. I cannot wait to do the muff diving scene with you guys. This is,
Ian McKellen at drag.
Yeah. Oh, what my. Muff diving scene, you ask? What, but didn't your agents tell you about this?
The other fun thing to do with Italy is the song that's playing, like the one song they had in this fucking movie that's playing during the photo shoot, which is the most amazing song ever. It's a catchy fucking earworm. But apparently one of the producers, his dad or some family members, his dad or his grandfather, I can't remember right offhand, they ran a radio station and he used to give him tons and tons of 45s. So he just randomly pulled a couple out. He's like, hey, this sounds pretty good. We can use this because likely there's no royalty we have to pay for this shit. So they went ahead and used it, and it turned out to be the main theme that an Italian comedian used and was famous for, and the guy was still well-known for at the time. So after the movie was about to be released, they got a call saying, hey, if you're going to use this, you know, we're cool with it. You just got to pay us $3,000. And they didn't know they were not going to pay until the movie was released. And then like, well, shit, because they already exceeded their music budget, which I think was like $10,000. And even then, most of the music was just stuff they were fucking around with and made. They didn't actually have like
Jay Chataway, who did all the William Lustig movies, threw the score.
Yes. But yeah, it just kind of threw them for a loop. Like they thought this would be the safest. Oh God. Yes. They just thought this would be like the safest option they could have for music. And then, no, it just cost them even more money out of this.
Well, I mean, that happens a lot with independent movies, right? Like when the Salkinds were producing The Trial for Orson Welles, they said, this is in the public domain. Nobody is ever going to charge us any money. And Welles is like, okay, well, I'm going to need a budget for sets. And they're like, oh, shit. It turns out the book is totally not in the public domain. It's like, what the fuck am I supposed to do now? Drink wine in the commercial and be really embarrassed? I mean, the hell right now. I can't even get off this couch. Just bring me some cakes, okay? It's really upset now.
You know that's the dream, though. What we all aim for.
throwing into a couch, yeah.
Yes.
Speaking of rolling into a couch, do we have anything more to add to these film facts that we all know and love, or new?
I don't know. Did you say you want to say a word about Stella Star?
I did not.
Yeah, isn't that Joe Spinell's wife?
Yes. Do you believe so?
Sir? Yeah, they did. Carolyn Monroe. Yeah, Stella Star is Carolyn Monroe. Yeah. They also did the last horror film the following year, in which there's a maniac killing people at the Cannes Film Festival. And Joe Spinell really wants this horror actress to be in his movie.
Yeah, and in fact, there was also, they cast Joe Spinell. I don't think she's credited. They cast his sister in part of the film, too.
Oh, shit.
She's just a random woman that he passes that she's carrying. When he's carrying the mannequin back to his apartment, and he passes a woman in the alleyway, that was his sister.
Nice.
Yes. Again, he cast a lot of friends and family in this, and he, oddly enough, once it got made on, like, illegal terms, like a lot of things were made back then, he said something that helped really sell the film and really push it up there for people and made it legitimate was that Stallone apparently really loved the movie, and he got from someone a shirt made for the movie. And he actually was seen at a premiere for a film wearing the shirt when he was interviewed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he just felt that was a solid being done.
And then Gene Siskel walked up to Sly Stallone and says, "Oh, my God, you have this on your shirt?" And then he vomited on him. Pass out.
Yes, a crispy, crispy vomit.
That Sylvester Stallone is so hot right now.
Oh, he
was so hot right then. This is right before he did First Blood, which is like the best thing ever.
Yeah,
I fucking love First Blood.
It is hard to beat a very early PTSD movie on Vietnam.
And this is back when not everybody had PTSD. You had to send away for the mail to get PTSD and wait 6 weeks.
Wait, are you not talking about the menstruation educational film?
No,
First Blood?
No, we're actually talking about. What a wonderful segue from periods.
We had a radio show?
So, these are some very juicy reviews. And,
Speaking of periods.
This is a gusher. When director William Lustig had the sick idea of making the most frightening and gruesome horror film, he should have remembered one little thing. Less gore galore and more suspense and good storyline. Involved with the plot twist and other surprises.
Yes,
but Maniac is more of the same, like other pointless slasher stalker films. It shows more than it says and really is as disturbing as offensive. Stay away from this movie.
I'm deeply offended.
There were a couple people.
Is that a droopy dog?
That's right. I'm Gene Siskel and it will never be okay.
It wasn't crispy enough. This is a horrible movie with no redeeming value. I realize that such a knock will actually drive people to purchase this. Let me bring something to your attention. This is a slasher movie with effective gore. In fact, for the time, the gore was more sick than similar movies. However, there are no scares, no suspense, no clever script, no story, and it has a stupid.
Well, that's a whole different level.
Huh?
Exactly. It's showing how stupid it is because they are an ignorant person to say stupid.
Stupid.
But yes, a stupid ending. I know that applies to most gore movies.
The ending's my favorite part.
The problem with this movie is that it is overly mean-spirited toward women. I am a man, a 6 foot, 235-pound, big, strong man that also raises a family.
Is he only that height when he's wearing his fedora?
Yes. This story, which had a guy killing women, B/C of mistreatment from his mother. Seems like it was written and directed by a person that shares the same demons as the killer in the film. The murders in this movie are so mean-spirited, yet with no cinematic value, that a normal moviegoer would have to be offended. This movie is not sick in a good movie way, but rather sick in an ashamed manner. This is a woman-bashing film that should make any viewer feel guilty that they are patronizing this garbage. A movie should have entertainment value. There is no cinematic, artistic touch on this film. This is simply a mean, mean movie! Exclamation point.
It's mean.
He says this while he's picking Flaming Hot Cheeto crumbs out of his neck beard.
No, he says that as he's polishing off a very rare bloody steak, because that's how all God-fearing American men
eat their steak. He's a big, strong man.
Yeah. Hey, he is a 6 foot, 235-pound big, strong man with a family. Wait,
235 pounds?
What? Yeah.
What?
235 pounds?
A family.
Right? Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Did he need his wife to hold the shopping cart for him? Fuck.
I had to post this review because I had to seek it out. And it was not easy because someone mentioned in their bad review simply saying, I agree completely with this reviewer. And a lot of people agreed with this.
Jeez.
So, you have been warned.
I bet they'd really like that Elliot Rodger manifesto, too.
I have ordered New York Ripper, Prowler, and Maniac at the same time.
And
received them on the same day and watched them pretty much one after the other. And I gotta say, Maniac is easily the most unwatchable of the three. By the looks of the reviews, I'm in the minority. And that, folks, is more frightening a fact than anything you'll find in Maniac. I mean, it is supposed to be the most graphical and realistic depictions of violence ever put on film. And yet, where is this movie? Is there any of that? The basic premise itself for this type of film is unforgivable. In the New York Ripper and Prowler, you know there's a nutbag on the loose killing people, women, and no matter how bad the movie is, you still get that Scooby-Doo type ending where the killer, typically predictable, is revealed. In this piece of shit, you know right off the bat with who the nutcase is, and therefore, there goes any attempt at having fun guessing who may be and then kicking yourself for not getting it right at the end. Or treating yourself to a Scooby treat if you got it right.
Was it the nurses?
Wait. New York Ripper ends with a fuck you to a dying child.
They don't care. They wanted their Scooby snack, dude. That's what they flat out said.
Basically, you know what? Maybe mommy should pick what you watch until you're grown up enough to decide, you know, what an adult movie is, you fucking child.
Basically, you will get to see women being stabbed once through the chest, and that's about it. At the beginning, a woman is strangled. Wow, haven't seen that on film before. And then scalped. Near the end, you will see someone's head get ripped off of his shoulders. And it's been done way better by the same guy, Savini, in Dawn and Day of the Dead. So what's the big deal, huh? This movie sucked.
Wait, what? It's like, oh yeah, Dawn of the Dead is the ultimate. Oh man, nothing
cares.
Yeah. It's like
I get my rocks off and dick hard watching that movie, I tell you what.
It's like okay, so wait, you're a disappointed gorehound, even though this thing's fucking sweet. And yeah. and you reference Romero, who, come on, dude, his zombies are just people painted green.
Yeah, and Prowler, I mean, Prowler
was good.
I like Prowler.
I like Joseph Zito a lot, honestly. But I mean, but that's a more straightforward slasher.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like you kind of know who the killer is from the backstory they're giving you, but it's Scooby Snack, Scooby Snack, Scooby Snack.
Yeah, it's like not everything has to be a mystery. Besides, this isn't a whodunit. Not every horror movie's a whodunit.
Yeah, I mean, granted, I would like to see a whodunit, like, you know, kind of an Agatha Christie thing, except you have titties flying everywhere and clitoris being cut off, you know, hey, we can only dream.
Who done it?
Yes, who
done it? That guy done it. I always hold the door for the ladies, I must say, and I hate to see anybody attacking the integrity of the ladies. They are, after all, the guardians of our morality. They are heavenly creatures.
It's true.
And I like to sniff their shoes.
Yes, and if you are to date me, you must not be of higher intelligence than me. I must be the most intelligent in the conversation and this relationship. You must also be under 112 pounds, and you must be 5'4".
Why don't you want to go to beat-ups with me? I'm handsome! I'm a nice
open
guy.
For me calling you the Duchess.
Yeah. And you must also be Asian as a plus.
Waifu need only a plus. Yeah.
You must be impressed also with my Naruto knowledge. Oh, God.
Must be open for bukkake.
Yes, and guys, I know how to use nunchucks, and I carry a sword. Enough said. Now, see, those people are more fucked up and freaky than Frank Zitti was.
I mean...
I'm just saying, the person who wrote this movie is sick, too. This is from a sick mind, eh? You're just sick. I'm really bothered right now by the sickness.
Honestly, the thing that got me with that entire review was, like, I just feel like I'm in the minority that hated this movie, and that scares me.
Well, quick, make a sign saying Jesus saves, repent now, and go parade up and down in front of a theater or something.
Yeah.
Everybody'll notice you then.
I mean, that's usually what I do on my Friday
night. Yeah, it's not, you guys. There was a movie with boobies.
Booba. 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 That's what we call romantic comedies.
That's right. If you just put Diane Keaton in Maniac, it would all be okay.
Oh, God.
Dress her up some men's suits and
she's on her way back from tennis, you know.
La-di-da.
Oh my God, you could have put Steve Martin in this. It would have been wonderful.
Oh my God.
I'm up for Steve Martin in anything.
Did you know that Steve Martin was one of the choices that Stanley Kubrick had for when he was first thinking about making Eyes Wide Shut back in the 70s? The source book Trom novel is comedic. So at one point he was thinking of doing it with Woody Allen, and another point he was thinking of doing it with Steve Martin. Oh, yeah.
We got Tom Cruise.
It's fine. I think it would have been fine if Warner Brothers hadn't butchered it so much. And I'm not talking about the nudity. I'm talking about the fact that it's a 160-minute edit when Kubrick probably would have chopped it down to 110.
Yeah. Well, then we also get things like AI, and that's when Spielberg decided, I don't want to make a Kubrick film, but I want to honor Kubrick.
Yeah, honor.
Yeah.
Like, let's face it, Spielberg, you just wanted to do whatever the fuck you wanted to do, and that's okay with everybody all the time for some reason.
Well, he's got the monies.
He does have the monies.
He's got
the
money for what it's worth.
What it's worth. That's true.
I'm thinking of sequeling Schindler's List, where they find out the aliens were behind the Holocaust.
Speaking that's a daring take.
I think it's time for our last segment. Well, second to last.
Uh-oh.
Who wants to touch this puppy?
I'll do it. I do it. I do it. I do it. I do it.
You do it. You do the thing.
I do the thing. Okay. So mine is going to be a cross between Maniac and Mannequin.
Oh, God. Maniac 2 on the move.
Yeah, I was going to say Mannequin 1 or 2.
Nothing's going to stop us now.
And it's going to have, what's his name, Meshach Taylor.
Oh, God.
And he's going to talk about his presentation.
Of course.
I appreciate Mr. Zini's work.
And so, yeah, basically, Zini's going to keep killing, and he's going to keep, like, dressing up these mannequins.
Zini, you're the mannequin one comes sick to life. Puppy, Zini.
Will they come back to kill him?
No, the one mannequin comes to life, and can they find love? Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
I can't strangle a mannequin.
The mannequin comes to life and says, "Thank you so much for building me and bringing me life."
Why am I?
Sounds like that. Yes. And then he has
also,
to go.
Gregory Hines is hunting me. You gotta save me. He can't find the fucking off switch.
The big thing in the movie is that he has to deal with her being her. Not exactly what he was expecting. He's like this.
Is there going to be a twist in the film where he puts on the necklace and becomes a mannequin?
Yes.
It's a comedy about letting go, holding on, and the life in between. Ready, PG-13?
Mother yes,
God. Maniac mannequin.
A mannequin? Maniacin?
Maniacin. Take it to the street.
God damn. Don't beep, I'm your brother.
Do you wish to go in?
Him, I'll call you.
Jesus
Christ. Yeah, you.
Okay, sorry. Who's next?
Adrian, do you want to go, or you want me to take the
flight? I'll do a sequel. We got a young Steve Buscemi as a kinky, aspiring New York City designer who, finds a pair of used handcuffs. Are they haunted handcuffs? Well, he'll never know until he starts doing his controversial window displays, which bring back the ghost of ZD in mannequin form.
Oh my God, no, no,
that's
no.
Right. At the witching hour when the neon is bright, he is again made flesh and preys on the ladies of the evening. Can this vulnerable, sensitive young gay man take on the evil that has survived insanity beyond the grave?
Is this what happened to you, Adrian?
Oh,
I will
yeah,
only buy
yeah.
into it if there is a mystical priest in this.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is called Neon Halo, a sequel to Maniac.
What is with you people and the mannequins?
What is that supposed to mean, you people? No. It's like fucking William Lustig saw that mannequin giallo that Umberto Lenzi did that never quite came together. He's like, you know, I could take this and make this into something really splashy. I don't believe. I think I can make it really awesome. Yeah. But first, I got to go down on this chick's twat real fast. You know, you got to earn the money, right? Yeah.
You know, that does raise a question. Why did we never get a mannequin horror film? We always get killer dolls, but never a mannequin.
Yeah, no, they never Until try now. That. Instead, they go back to the tried and true bullshit. It's like, oh, well, this one's got an evil mirror, and then later they do an exorcism. Why? The devil, I don't know. Just the devil, not one of the demons? Yeah, no, it's just the devil. Yeah.
See, that I would like if Frank Zini did curse himself with a bracelet to become a freaking mannequin. Then he kills whoever it is that unfortunately takes the necklace off him and shit. And like, oh, this looks so lovely. Why is this man wearing it? He's like, I'm gonna scalp you. And then he puts it back on, like, see you in a few years. Then he becomes basically the creeper, I guess.
That'd be a really disturbing poster, right? You got a mannequin body, and then halfway up, it turns into Joe Spinell, and he's all the
you know,
like,
it would be a,
I'm a good scalp, you
speaking of, it would be a fun poster to play on, considering in the first one, you have a huge fucking manly cock bulge in the fucking poster. So if you
head.
Had it switched off with, like, a mannequin body, that would be a great play.
Like, but you could
like
borrow
all those
the
Sticky Fingers album cover.
Yeah.
I was going to say you could borrow the picture, a picture from Labyrinth of the Bowie.
That's magic dance.
The battle
oh,
of the
yeah.
Well,
yeah, magic was certainly dancing in my pants.
I went a little family friendly in my sequel to this film.
Ba-da-bum.
My version of the movie tells a different, unheard side of the film until now. It's a Disney Pixar remake telling the story of Frank's many murderous tools, where they all have names like Mech the Machete, Bay the Bayonet, Shoddy the Shotgun, and Ray the Razor. These weapons are forced to endure the horrors of a murdering madman murdering men and women. They have no choice but to accept that this is their life. So, living in an apartment with animated, very talkative scalps and mannequins, they have to work together to find out how they can end the terrorist reign of Frank Zitti, which is what leads into the mannequins coming alive at the end of the film, like in the original, and killing him using these set weapons. So, we will have voice work with Goodly Crystal, Emma Stone, Jack Black, Tim Allen, and of course, the America's sweetheart, Tom Hanks. Somebody poisoned the water hole.
Yeah, up yours, Disney Pixar.
Up yours, Disney, a lot.
It's, we need the ghost of Teddy Roosevelt to murder them all.
It would be a blessing.
It'd be bully!
Bully! So, I'm actually kind of curious here. Because a lot of the reviews... I ride a bicycle. I mean, I used to when I was a kid, but I'm thinking of going back to it, so I'm a little bike curious.
Curiosity satisfied.
You set the table. I merely took the invitation. But, looking into a lot of research with this film, a lot of behind the scenes stuff, we've mentioned it a couple times now that the film was successful for the time and how much money went into it.
Yeah, it's hella profit right there.
It's like it was very profitable. It was a success, but it also had just as many people hating it because of the extreme violence. But in the same manner that Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer did, sure. Whereas like people just didn't like how close to home it got with a couple things.
Yeah, I kept thinking of that while watching.
Yeah, so it's like with that in mind, but also just how. There was really a very strong movement on this film being praised as anti-feminist because of all the women being killed. But I kind of think that happens in a lot of horror movies anyway when women get killed. It's just, it's going to pop up no matter what. But I guess I'm asking, does this film, say, through today's lens, strike you as being anti-feminist? Pro-feminist, because you have women taking revenge on him, even if it's in his mind. It's like the madness overwhelms him. Or is it simply just a deranged psychopathic killer killing? Because
killer's got to kill. The modern lens is like way, way overblown, where you're not allowed to depict any kind of amorality. And people are gone off the fuck their rocker. Like, it's like depicting a movie which includes people who are not racist is not the same as making a racist movie.
Yeah,
because these things that have a sexist or racist or homophobic stance to them, they don't generally see themselves as that, and so they present things as fact. Whereas this thing, it's a subjective presentation. You're getting the mind of the killer, and like it's treatment of women, and we know why it's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like he's killing all women. He's killing women who remind him of his mother. They're like specific ones.
Yeah, and even with the killing of Tom Savini, he is killing men too.
That's the most graphic. Sociopath. Well, this is another thing that nobody ever calls attention to too. Is that in movies in general there is a double standard in that men are killed more graphically than are women usually.
Yeah.
Like I remember when we reviewed Kick-Ass. There's a scene where Hit Girl takes out a whole room full of men, and when the woman dies, she gets the most elegant, pretty death.
Yeah. You
know? The men, they'll blow their heads and faces apart, you know, like, and destroy them. Women, they always preserve the face and usually the breastises. Like, oh no, well, we can't destroy that. That would be gross.
Yeah, well, and that's something even Bill Lustig has talked on, too, is that he's like, I was making films in the time of exploitation. And he's like, even then, like, he quoted, I think it was, I Spit on Your Grave. He's like, people depicted how that was very demeaning toward women, but also people like Joe Bob Briggs hailed it as extremely pro-feminist.
It is pro-feminist. Because
it's a woman taking revenge on the people that harmed her. She wasn't going to be a victim.
Yeah, but she doesn't need a man to avenge her.
Yeah, but again, like, it's one of those, like...
The same story with Ciro H. Santiago's Naked Vengeance. You know, it's like, it is a it's centered around a non-exploitive rape scene. You know, and it's a woman who has to take it onto her hands, and even the law is turned against her. She has to be a vigilante.
Yeah. You were saying, Linda?
I was saying, like, Rape Cop.
Yes, like Rape Cop. He took justice into his hands. But, I mean, even then, it's like the remake they did of this film, it's still beat for beat followed the same. It's just committing crimes against women, which, yeah, with the double standard, it is kind of seen as you can only do so much to the female body on screen because we just have it ingrained that you can't take it further than that, which it would be different to see happen, but you just don't see it happen often, except for like Italian giallo films, which really go there.
And that's why we're going to create a movie with very graphic violence against and killing of children.
That's right.
Yes.
But no,
people boycott it. We'll be like, what happened?
In reality, psychopaths, you know, psychopaths is usually a psychosexual thing, and they'll usually be killing the group that they'd be into. If they're gay, they kill their same sex. If they're straight, they kill the opposite sex. They usually kill people the same color that they are. And they will graphically murder people in that group because something set them off, you know.
Well, and even the scene we kept going back to. Yeah. Even the scene we went back to where he stabs the woman and then he lays on top of her. It's like he's breathing and slowly moving on her. And people were more horrified by it because it looked like he was having sex with her corpse as she was dying.
Well, and also
it just looked like something psychosexual was going on.
The early 80s is also the golden age of jerk-off scenes, by the way.
Very true.
That's true.
But it's just one of those things that I think stuff like that comes more from your interpretation of what you're seeing and in your head versus what's actually being portrayed on screen at the time, too.
Yeah, no, that's why those reviews are interesting, because we're psychoanalyzing the people who left them. The stuff that they found sick, it's like, was that in the movie? Or was that in your brain? Well,
and that was another point, too, I was going to bring up with the film, is that a lot of people were saying that he killed the women because they reminded him of his mother, or she was the main protagonist behind it. But there's also equally a large number of people that say none of that is explicitly stated in the film. It's just kind of offhandedly handled, and people even felt that it was shoehorned in, the whole explanation for why he does what he does, because you don't really see anything from the mother, at least from their perspective, until they pull a carry at the end of the film where his mother's corpse comes out of the grave, maggots and all, and attacks him. But it's like before that, he's just... Yeah, it's like before that, he's just kind of struggling with his own internal thing.
Where's my mother's day cake?
Well, there's also a whole mindset that will tell you, it's like, well, it doesn't matter what he's doing, he's wrong.
Well,
I mean,
put him in chair, it doesn't matter.
I don't know. I have a problem with people who have a problem with like elements in movies. It's a storytelling method. I mean, it's a fucking story, you guys. Like, it's not like they just put that in there, you know, for no apparent reason. I mean, there are fucking.
It's not an anti-woman movie. Movie is a Jeremy Banner. Like, if it was, it wouldn't depict itself as a movie about a psychopath.
Yeah, exactly.
At the same time, it's like people weren't saying the same thing, at least to my knowledge, about Psycho when that came out, and that was very much strict on he was his mother and he hated women that were dirty according to his mother's mind. And it's like that was a lot of violence in there at the time for that, but they weren't saying that it was hugely anti-feminist film.
But
there are movies that piss me off, but it's like, you know, I don't think they're going out of their way just to, I don't know, like I. It's a fucking story. At the end of the day, it's a fucking story.
Well,
it's a story about family.
family.
And learning something.
I think the most anti-woman movies that I have ever seen are the movies made for Lifetime.
Yeah.
You notice those? Because like Joe Bob Briggs pointed out, in the early Lifetime movies, it was about a woman struggling about a man being a bastard. And it's like, okay, this is clear cut. Men suck, and this is women's stories. Like, that made sense. But over time, it sort of morphed, you know?
Yeah.
And so there were racist omission too.
Well, that's a lot of television, unfortunately. But the Lifetime movies, it's like women were villains also. And the women who were supposed to be the main characters are also not well depicted.
No.
Like, they're shown making really awful, they're consistently doing really awful choices and doing morally terrible things to one another. I'm like, are we sure this is television for women? Yeah, and if you want to see worse, just watch Hallmark.
Oh, Hallmark is the fucking worst. Hallmark is like way more racist by omission.
More racist, more sexist.
More sexist. It's religious. All about like this woman who's just struggling, and what she really needs in her life is a man to come along and fix it. Yeah. And a miracle happens. Thank you, baby Jesus.
She needs a 7-inch rager and a sweater.
Yeah.
And the rager is holding some hot cocoa. It's cute. It's Christmas.
Yeah. And I don't know, there are a lot of Hallmark movies that are like this woman is an independent designer, or she owns a bakery, or she owns this company about making crafts or some shit.
And she
like
has
that.
A frumpy gay a friend in a pink suit. Isn't it cute?
Oh, they rarely have homosexuals
have
on like Lifetime.
So I've seen that in some of that. Well, not on Lifetime, but on Hallmark. I've seen that.
I mean, that's what I meant on Hallmark. On Hallmark, it's mostly like if there's a minority, then it's the townie, or it might be like the sassy coworker.
Yeah.
But it's always like it's never ever ever anything that could be Christian. Like, maybe a woman is unhappy and not getting enough attention in her marriage, so she steps out. No, it's never any of that shit. Like, there just happens to be a guy in town that moves into town or whatever. And, he's a single father because his wife passed away and her husband passed away and she's a single mother, or
couldn't be divorced. Like, somebody had to die.
Essentially, it's like Family Guy said, just everything you said can be just stopped and put in with, I am going to show you how my penis is going to solve all your problems. That's the solution of all those films.
Come and get your penis.
It's like going back to the thing of this and how they're trying to put in the theme of this. Like, was it his mother was the problem? What was, what wasn't? Hello, Catters. The thing I felt was kind of, I don't know, what the fuck is that furry monstrosity?
It's Catters.
I just think like you were saying, it's more like you were saying, just character driven and character piece. And I still feel it kind of relates going into another off the fucking wall subject, Star Wars, when they had to add in, of all things, in Return of the Jedi, Darth Vader screaming no 3 fucking times when his son's getting electrocuted on the floor. You don't need that to know fucking Vader's struggle with watching his son
fall. You put the two
fall.
Shots together and it's like, oh yeah. You know.
Yeah, it's like it was perfectly fine being silent. You can tell without him saying a goddamn word what was going through his mind. Well, but then George Lucas is like, oh, we have to hear him say it because then people will know the struggle.
We've got to dumb it down some more because I've only got $6 billion and I want to have $7 billion. So
I got to make it really dumb.
Let's not even get started on what the fuck he did with E.T.
I think we should have a CGI Mantan Morland come out and juggle through the scene in this part. Yeah. By the way, I'm not racist. I made the only black action movie to ever to exist. Nobody else made one before.
Yes.
There was having a salad and thinking, why aren't there black action movies? I was having,
Oh, you should look up his comments on Disney when he sold them Star Wars. It's amazing. But the last thing I was going to try to bring up, and mind you, I was mostly sober when I wrote this, so we'll just go with it like the reviews I've read. Looking at our film choices, Frankenhooker, Hell Knight, and Maniac, you have two films that had guys who directed porn directing a major movie. And we've had two films that had porn stars in the movie. Given how there's still, for some reason, a social phobia toward people in the adult industry being written off when they attempt to make a legitimate movie or a turn in a Hollywood film. Was there a film that you felt we didn't cover? Because there was a lot of choices we had that had porn stars and porn directors in them or directing them. One that you feel maybe better could have categorized like a success story from this? Or do you feel like with ours, we covered that? Or was there one film in total that kind of fit all of the criteria we were looking for with?
Well, there is a more legit movie that I wanted to do, but for some reason is not available at all streaming, which is weird because I remember it had a wide DVD release. The one I wanted to do, which is somewhat considered a little more highbrow, but it's debatable. I wanted to do a Greg Araki movie. I wanted to do The Doom Generation, which had a gay porn actor appear in it. And the Doom Generation, it's very divisive still. A lot of people are like, oh, well, that's stupid. That's stupid with the talking severed head. And like, oh, they're just ripping off Natural Born Killers, even though like it's, and Greg Araki presented that one as a heterosexual movie by Greg Araki, even though the characters are bisexual. I thought that one was maybe you might consider that perhaps a little more conceptual since sexuality was a theme in it. And even though it's off the wall, it's perhaps like you might call it a more cerebral treatment. That's what I wanted to do. I didn't want to do certain low hanging fruit, you know?
Yeah.
And Ron Jeremy gets entirely too much attention.
He really does, and in prison he'll get even more attention.
Oh my!
But I was even going to say, even Hell Knight, as much shit we gave you for, it's like you had your points about it that were right. Yeah. It was a very beautifully shot film, especially going with the gothic theme. But it's kind of looking back at that as well. It's gothic movies did kind of fall off after a while, so maybe that's also why. Yeah, it's like maybe it just wasn't really that well received on it, but it was somewhat of a successful film. It was a good movie. And I just feel like even then, like with the director, it's just I think you said he didn't really direct too much after.
He did not do a whole lot in the mainstream. Yeah. Like Chatterbox was like risque, you know, was semi mainstream. After he did one of the Angel movies, the Angel series about the girl who's like she's like what, like an honor student by day and a hooker by night.
Yeah.
Tom Denise Simone directed one of the sequels to that series. I don't think he did a whole lot else, but I don't know if he actually ever went back to porn.
Okay.
So it might have been technically a successful transition. Like maybe he made enough to retire.
There were a couple that I wanted to do, but I mean, I couldn't. I mean, it's Frankenhooker. Hooker. Like, of course I'm going to go with Frankenhooker Hooker all day, every day. But I don't really want to talk about them because we're going to have a special guest next week and maybe they want to talk about it.
Still can talk about it, but we're not talking about which one we felt was better. That's the thing. It's like that's the conversation we'll have when we have them on, because I very much would like to have that guest input on that as well, whomever the guest may be. But I'm just also talking more about, like we were talking with Adrian, the successful transition from that. Yeah. Because even like a more modern example of a movie that did really, really well, more than it should have, was the fucking Piranha remake. That had Riley Steele in it. And she was more known for like the pirates porn movies. But she didn't say a damn word in that movie.
Know
why they used her, because full body nudity, front and back. So it didn't do much of anything for her. It was just kind of a got on there, she got her screen credit. They never used her for anything else after.
There are some other industry stigmas though, for example. Yeah. Like you notice like there's some of the best dramatic performances that you'll see in movies will often be from actors who made their career in comedy. Like Robin Williams was a great dramatic actor. Like I don't think he gets enough credit for that.
Steve Martin.
Right, very much Steve Martin. But very rarely will like the Oscar or the Golden Globe wind up going to one of these guys. They'll be like, fuck that guy. He made one of those yuck fest pictures. I hate those. I hate laughing. I like serious Oscar bait shit.
Joan Cusack. too, for that matter. Shit. Yeah.
But yeah. That stigma still exists. Like, they'll get shit from award ceremonies or from critics, which is a little reminder that maybe you shouldn't let these things dictate your life, and these awards maybe don't mean as much as you think they did.
They never did in the first place. It's just a lot of back padding.
Yeah, Joan Cusack was actually up for Best Actress, and I want to say it was In and Out, but she
Gay? Everybody gay?
But I fucking love her, and of course she wasn't going to get considered seriously because it's a fucking comedy.
That's also people really selling short the fact that comedy doesn't just happen. It actually takes talent and effort.
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes timing.
Boobs and fart jokes. Like, that's not what a comedy is. That's lazy.
That was actually something Weird Al said recently. It was in a tweet when Madonna tried parodying one of her own songs, and it just failed horribly. And then he tweeted back, like, not so easy, is it? I got more likes than her.
Fucking A, yeah.
But that's the thing. It's like, I think that's why comedians transition so well to drama.
Yeah.
Because it's so much more difficult to be a successful comedian and to do comedic acting than people realize.
Yeah, yeah, but what about how it concerns in terms of porn, though?
Well, I think there actually might be a similar situation going on there. Like, pornographic actor might not always necessarily be required the level of ability that a comedic actor does, but they're not doing nothing. Yeah.
Well, even porn directors, there's been a lot of them that have transitioned to successful Hollywood careers. Just not often.
Like Francis Ford Coppola, the bellboy in The Playgirls.
Yes.
And then later on, the fucking Godfather in The Conversation.
And sometimes it's just so much easier to get into porn than it is to get into movies.
There are low budget entryways into making entertainment. You know, some people make a cheapo horror movie, cheapo comedy, cheapo porno. Yeah. And the cheapo porno is the one that's most likely to get distributed.
Sure.
So.
But I mean, like, with, I'm not calling Rocky Horror Picture Show a porno.
No.
But I mean, you know, Susan Sarandon started off with a movie where she's like going around in her chonies all day and like getting some action. And I mean, it's not a porno, but I mean, it's just how some people start.
It makes people blush. Oh no.
Yeah. Well, like we've all learned, Sylvester Stallone did a porno before he did Rocky because he had to eat.
He's gotta eat.
He doesn't screw anyone, but he's in one. And then they decided to rename it because they were going off of the success.
After Rocky came out, they retitled it The Italian Stallion. But he'd also appeared in Bananas. Like he showed up in some random stuff.
Yeah, well, even wrestlers too. Fucking Andre the Giant did a lot of porn. But it's like, they had to make money back then. They weren't paid really anything at all.
Is that a bad person that I want to see it?
Not as much as the people who are like looking at how thick his fingers were and the fact that his wedding ring, you could fit four fingers inside it. So people obviously are like, we want to see Dick. So yeah.
I mean,
mathematically, we take the size of the foot
and
then multiply it by the size of the nose. All right. Now divide by the square root of the height. Okay.
Can't you just remember, like, back in that time watching wrestling and thinking, I'd like to see that guy's dick?
I didn't watch wrestling.
That was an entirely different experience for us. Like, boy, that Roddy Piper, he sure can kick some butt. I want to see his dick.
Awesome.
What?
I really, really do wish I would have had the chance to see his dick. I met him in person, and I missed my opportunity to see.
You reached down his pants, and you got to squirt it out.
You would likely have a better chance of seeing Ric Flair's dick at this point. But...
Woo! Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, Carlo was there, so it made it a little more difficult to say, sir, nothing sexual or anything. I would just really like to see your dick before you die. Come on.
May I wear your testicles as a hat?
Come on.
I'm not hearing a no.
And we told you not to go out tonight.
She'll talk about this, but not discuss porn films that we could have chosen.
It's a song about Alice.
No, I was just saying, like, I don't want to share the ones that I wanted to choose just to find out that our guest chooses one of them. And, like, here we already talked about
it. Well, the one I mentioned we can't choose, it's not streaming.
Yeah. That's true. Oh, no, I was just talking about my choices, my other choices. So I will share them at some point.
Oh, yes, yes, we know. So with that final nail in the coffin, where do we go from here, folks?
Well, I got to go to work later.
I'm going to get some Chipotle. So I guess now is the time where I say, please listen, follow, rate, and review. Videorama is about to say Cage's Kiss. They're dead to us. People are dead. especially on Apple Podcasts, because it helps us immensely. It helps other people find out about us, and it boosts us up in the ratings and levels. So when people are searching, they will find us. When we spot it, we will give you a shout out. So thank you very, very much. Also check out our stuff on YouTube. If you're not already, you could see our beautiful faces. You could see that today. I kind of sort of did like a red, scalp thing today.
Why?
I was bored and I'm on muscle relaxers again.
Well, at least your nose isn't falling apart like mine is.
Yeah. Also, check out our stuff at Patreon. It's at patreon.com/VideoramaPod. You could find awesome things on there. For just a couple dollars a month, you can help support us, help us live.
And sponsor a child.
You can get buttons and stickers. You can get early access to some of our shows. You could get Adrian to write, make you up a doodle. perhaps you can even pay at the level where you can suggest a movie that we cover or a theme that we could cover, or you can even be a guest. So check that out. It's definitely worth it. And check out my other podcast about witches in history and in stories of all media. That's Bed Knobs and Broom Flicks. That's Broomflicks. You know we're enjoyable because we got them licks at the end. And also, before I forget, remember that you can find Videorama on Twitter at Videorama P. The letter P stands for Videorama Pod. You could eventually find us on our website, and you could write to us at VideoramaPod@gmail.com. And you can, if you find us on Twitter, you can go onto our account there and take our poll to decide who had the best choice this month and who deserves to be the employee of the month. Adrian, can you tell them about your presentation?
Oh, yeah. No, I'd be living on the deviantart.com as Leo the Fox, LEOTHEFOX, all run together, all lowercase, all one word. You can check out the 3,000 artworks and stories that I got on there. I've been very, very busy. And you can also check me out under the same thing on my Patreon and on the DeviantArt. We got the Dreadful Tales up. You should read those fantabulous stories that people have been working so hard on. And I'm on YouTube. You'll find me.
Yeah. You said hard on.
Oh, sweet summer child.
That's all we got for you, folks. Stay tuned next week. Oh, yeah, Donnie.
Yours is a singular sense of humor, Linda.
I know it.
We shall bury you with it. But yes, I'm Unreal Goals on Twitter. I'm also Stilgar the Twi'lek on Instagram. And that's about all I'm going to sell to you this time. So yeah, I guess we'll have a mystery guest that will be seeing who they'll be next week and discuss things more then. Yeah.
Oh,
God, he's vanishing again into the fucking realm of darkness.
It's happening.
Oh, no.
That's what's happening.
Tune in later or dawn. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Yeah. I don't know.
But while we're at it, I'd like to give a shout out to Kelly M. Madden for leaving us a really awesome review on Cage's Kiss for Podchaser. So, or for Cage's Kiss on Podchaser. I can say things. I can talk. But thank you so much. We really, really appreciate it. And you're awesome. Yeah. Yeah, those people I beat up in the bum fight in the alley the other day.
The ones that were pissing on our strudel. And Adrian's like, that's my strudel.
That's my strudel. Get out of here, you ruffians. You get out of here. Scram.
Have you seen Pig? It's a good movie with the Nicolas Cage. We're surrounded by a lot of elderly people. Believe me, we've had two elderly women call in thus far.
Colorado space, baby. I'll suck your dick for some free rentals.
Yep, they're all like, there was a movie where Nicolas Cage is on a World War II boat and it sinks. I don't remember like what it's called.
Yeah, have a good night, folks.
Good night and enjoy porn.
Hats off to you.
Rats off.